Thank you, Brother Marco. Well, Ezekiel, that is Jeremiah 38, might seem a strange place to be talking about the mercy and patience of God, but I think it's like a lot of things. It depends on your viewpoint. And I think that is the right viewpoint, which we will try to look at it through those eyes this morning. Well, greetings and love to all of you from your brothers and sisters down in San Diego. Come visit us. And thank you for coordinating your Sunday school breakfast with our granddaughter's birthday. That worked very well for us. And it's nice to see my old childhood buddy Pete, which is a very rare and pleasant thing. Well, as our brother read so ably this morning out of Jeremiah, the Lord is saying, this is the end, finished, done with the kingdom of Judah. He says, it's over. He says, Babylonia is going to prevail. They will take this city, and you cannot escape. But the Lord had been saying things like that for a very, very long time. In fact, back in Isaiah 3, you don't need to turn it up, but Isaiah the prophet says, and listen, Jerusalem is ruined. Judah has fallen. It hadn't happened. Not yet. In Isaiah 3, it says further, the Lord has taken from Jerusalem every bit of bread and every drop of water. Hadn't happened yet. It wasn't going to happen for 150 years or so. That would be like somebody saying before the Civil War here in the States, prophesying things that hadn't yet come to pass in the U.S. You know, after a while, it gets a little hard to believe, a little hard to imagine, especially if it's being said all the time in between, which it was. By the prophets. It's happening. It's happened. It's dire. It's on the horizon. It's on the doorstep. And human nature being what it is, people basically ignored it. They didn't believe it. All this doom and gloom, this disaster. Although in our chapter this morning, it's getting a little hard to ignore the fact that perhaps the biggest, strongest army in the world is right outside the wall of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem has nothing to withstand it. Nothing. Militarily, it's over. Babylon was swallowing up every country. And, you know, Israel's only a partial country anyway. The northern kingdom has been gone for a long time. It's just Judah against Babylon, a world power, no chance. And Zedekiah is concerned about that. We see in our reading today, he sent to Jeremiah about word from the Lord. And he did in yesterday's reading as well, 37. In 37, he says, is there any word from the Lord to Jeremiah? This is in verse 17, and Jeremiah says, yes, there is. And it's bad news. It's very bad news. You and this city will be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon, period. And he says, by the way, what happened to all those prophets that were saying Babylon will never invade. They will never come against Jerusalem. What happened to them, by the way? And he says, as he does in our chapter this morning, and you, Zedekiah, you have got to surrender. You have got to give it up. You cannot prevail. He says, Nebuchadnezzar is my servant. He's doing my will. I've given him all these lands, yours included. That was a very unpopular idea, of course. Both the idea that Jerusalem couldn't escape, and especially the idea that Zedekiah ought to surrender. I mean, that's treason, isn't it? And of course, that's why Zedekiah didn't want to surrender. He says, well, if I did that, what would happen to me? My own people would probably kill me. That was in our chapter this morning. And Jeremiah says, no, God will protect you if you do what he's telling you. You will not be given over to them. He says, surrender and live. So because of Jeremiah's message being so unpopular, he is where we find him this morning in our reading. He's in jail, he's in prison, he's in a dungeon, he's in a pit. And the princes are calling for his execution. They're saying, this fellow, he is weakening the hands of what we got left. We've got to kill him. And what does the king say? You know, Zedekiah wasn't much of a man, not much of a king. He says, well, what could I do? You know, I'm only the king. What could I do? And so he does nothing. And it's only the Lord, because the Lord said, I will not let you die. But they intended to leave him in the pit and just let him die. And I think it's very instructive as far as the state of the nation, you might say, when you see who saves Jeremiah. Well, it's not the king. And it's not a priest, a religious leader, and it's not even a Jew. Who is it? It's God, but by the hand of a foreigner, right? Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian. He says, this isn't right. This isn't right, what they're doing to Jeremiah. Nobody in Israel would stand up for God. This foreigner says these men are doing evil in what they're doing to Jeremiah. And I think one thing that sometimes I forget, because of the idolatry that they were immersed in, which the scriptures sometimes tend to focus on, I forget about the morality or the lack of same in the nation at this time. I'm just going to go back to the earlier chapters of Jeremiah, not going to turn them up. But in chapter 5, God says, you see if you can find one man. He says, you find me one man who is an upright, righteous man in this city, and I'll pardon it. He also says in chapter 5, he says, they are an adulterous people. And he doesn't mean idolatry in this case. He says every man is after his neighbor's wife. Every man is hard after his neighbor's wife. Chapter 6. Everyone is greedy, covetous, and dishonest. And it goes on and says, and are they ashamed? No, they're not ashamed. They don't even admit that it's wrong. Chapter 7, will you steal, murder, commit adultery, lie, and walk after gods, and then come to me? He says later on in that chapter, you burn your sons and daughters in the fire. This unbelievable practice is mentioned time and time again in Jeremiah. It's mentioned in chapter 7, in chapter 19, and chapter 32. The blood of innocents, it says, they burn their sons with fire to Baal and to Moloch. Unbelievable. And their treatment of neighbors, everyone lies to his neighbor. With their mouth, they speak peace. But in their heart, they plan an ambush. You know, it's interesting, the readings this morning. This exhortation, in a way, could have been given from the Mark reading. You know, it starts out with that parable of the vineyard, where everything was done for the vineyard. What more could have been done? God planted it and furnished it and set it all up to produce fruit. And what happens? Only violence and murder and brutality to the people that he sends, and finally to his son. And then later on in Mark, it says, what's needed here is the love of God and the love of one's neighbor. That's the same issues, of course, back in Jeremiah. There's no love of one's neighbor, and there's no love and true worship of God at all. I think it's very instructive about their spiritual state that even after Jerusalem fell, the remnant, which you might think had learned their lesson from idolatry, they say later on in Jeremiah in chapter 44, we know what we did wrong. Yes, we do. We did not worship the Queen of Heaven enough. That's what they say. Jeremiah comes to them, you know, to try to point out their error again. And they say in verse 17, we know what we did. We didn't worship her enough. When we were worshiping her more, things were better. But now we're going to involve the entire family. I said this exhortation was one about mercy and patience. You know, God for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years had put up with their morality, their immorality, their treatment of their neighbor, of their brother, of their children, of their wives. They were morally bankrupt as a nation. He had put up with their worship of other gods. And it's true that in a sense he brought Babylon, but Babylon was like, it was like a flood. It was rising up and covering every nation. I think, you know, basically what I think happened is God took down the wall. He said, I'm not protecting you anymore. Because there's no way they could stand against Babylon. I mean, there's no way, God says, that they could have ever come in the land in the first place. Seven nations greater and more mighty than you were in there at the time that they came in. In Romans, in the New Testament, looking back over it all, God says about his patience, he says, all day long, I have held out my hands to a disobedient people, all day long. It says that he rose early, as it were, and sent his prophets to them, but they wouldn't hear. And the message was always the same, and it got very old. But as far as the mercy of God, I just wanted us to look toward the end of the exhortation here, down in verse 18 of our reading. So let's take a look at that. Jeremiah 38:18. Let's look at 17. Starting in the middle of 17. If you will go forth to the king of Babylon's princes, "You will live. The city will not be burned with fire. You will live, and your house." That would be his wives and his children. Zedekiah had it within his power, personally, to save the city from being burned, to save his children from dying, and his wives being given over to Babylon. He says, but if you won't do it, you can't escape. And I think this is the human struggle. You know, God tells us to do things, and we think, well, you know, that doesn't seem right, or maybe that doesn't seem possible. That doesn't seem feasible. Maybe I'll just do it my way. That's what we say as humans. And it ends just exactly as it did here for Zedekiah. His children were killed before his eyes. He was blinded. The wall was knocked down. The city was burned with fire. There was a great slaughter. His wives were taken. It was a total disaster. And yet, right up till the day before, as it were, God was saying, just do it my way. Surrender. And we said it had been going on for hundreds of years. And if you just look up here for a second, Jeremiah 38, Jeremiah 39, the page turns. In Jeremiah 39, it says, all the princes of the king of Babylon came in, and they sat in the middle gate. And Zedekiah fled, and the army pursued and took him. In 39, it was done. You know, God was done with them. But right up until that page turned, there was time for the mercy of God and the patience of God. But, you know, isn't it like that with us today? You know, I think back 60 years, which I can remember. You know, I heard the same prophetic chapters. You know, the chapters out of Daniel, the chapters out of Ezekiel, about the northern power coming down, about their enemies all around them. I heard it again and again in lectures. Same message. And we're still seeing it today on the ground and in God's word. But one day it's going to be just exactly like it was in Jeremiah. The page is going to turn and it's going to be over. And there's going to be a new king. A king that cannot be withstood. And he is going to demand every knee to bow. Until that time, you know, this is sort of a Sunday school kickoff, and there may be people that haven't made that decision initially for Christ and for God. There's still time until the page turns. And for those of us that have made the decision, really, it's a decision every day, isn't it? Jesus says, take up your cross daily and follow me. It's a new day of dedication every time the sun rises, a new day of decision. And just like it was back in Isaiah and Jeremiah's time, things would heat up. You know, way back in Hezekiah's time, the city was surrounded by Assyria. Huge army. Huge problems. And yet, the city was delivered. The angel of the Lord went out and took care of that army that came against them. And then more predictions were made. But eventually, it happens. The problem with it being stretched out for 60 years, 120 years, 200 years is it gets to be very old news. It gets to be very old news. It seems like just another false alarm, and it gives reason for doubters and delayers to say, well, just another false alarm, nothing really to worry about. In conclusion, I'd just like to read a couple of verses out of Mark chapter 8. Let's look at verse 34. Mark 8:34, when he had called the people to him with his disciples, he said to them, whoever will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. And here's a little echo back to the Old Testament that we've been looking at. Whoever will save his life will lose it. That was Zedekiah. He was going to save it. They were going to save the city. They were going to continue to fight. Well, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same will save it.